Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and these are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 3, Episode 19, A Night at the Movies. Original air date is April 10th, 2003. Director is Matt Earl Beasley. Writers are Anthony E. Zeiker, Danny Cannon, and Carol Mendelson. We begin the episode with some shots of the Vegas Strip, and there's like audio over it. We'll learn pretty soon where the audio is coming from. But before then, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
We did pretty well. At 41, not quite maxed out. Yeah, it's weird how fast it can climb up. They're doing a pretty good job. Steady sort of one scene, few seconds here and there. They're a little bit longer holds on some of these scenes. I would say the gold standard is like 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you got one, it's like doesn't quite make it a 3. I counted it as 2. We had several 4s this time. Maybe they're just playing with try to get to the right number of seconds for the final.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. I was like, oh, they were just like, oh, we're like a few seconds short. So let's just expand those Vegas scenes out a little bit. So we leave the Vegas Strip. We are inside a movie theater. This is where the audio is coming from. It is a movie playing up on the screen. It's a black and white noir film. And then we hear a phone ringing, which brings an usher into the theater. He approaches a man. He's asking him to turn his phone off. He goes to kind of touch the guy because the guy's not responding to him. The man slumps over and starts like dripping blood into his popcorn.
What's interesting about this scene is like cell phones are still pretty rare. But they're like common enough, like people know people who have them, like everyone knows someone in their life who has a cell phone.
Oh, yeah. At this point, yeah.
I think if you're the kind of person who would have had a pager at this point, you have a cell phone. Gosh,
yeah.
But this was like a real problem for, I think, in the early 2000s.
Because muting your phone was not as easy as it is now. Like now it's like one tiny little button that you just like, bloop, and then your phone is muted.
People are just better at it. They've done it times. They're used to it. Yeah. You go in, you turn. I also think a lot of people don't keep their phone volume up at all.
I almost never do. My phone is muted.
Vibrator is such a good thing.
Yeah. My phone is muted probably 99% of the time because I have ADHD and I can't have my phone pinging at me all the time because I won't get anything else done.
Shout out to my niece who at Thanksgiving yesterday, very excited to tell me that she has a cell phone number now and wanted to change numbers and text a little bit.
That's so cute.
But was sad when I didn't have my ringer on. So when she called me, it didn't make any noise.
I do have an Apple Watch though. So if someone calls me, I do know because my Apple Watch vibrates. So
I would have been so into a smartwatch when I was like 25, 26. I was like, there used to be this thing on ThinkGeek. The shout out
Think
to
Geek, website, yeah.
Where you could get like the number and your text messages on this little screen on the wristband.
Yep.
And it was like $150.
Oh, I'm sure.
Spare $150 for the life of me. That time in my life. And
we were eating. We met because we went to a bar that had $2 pizza
on a Tuesday night.
On a Tuesday night because that's what we could afford. And that's how we met.
So. Yeah. And cheap and or strong drinks.
Very strong drinks. Very strong drinks. Shout out to Aaron. I'm sober now, so I can't really enjoy those fruits anymore. But at the time, she made a solid drink.
Yeah, so it was kind of a fun thing. I was like, I kind of forgot about that. Also, people don't go to as many movies. I don't go to as many movies. I'm sure other people do.
Oh, gosh. I haven't.
But I haven't like really heard a phone go off in a movie theater the last 4 or 5 times I went to the movies.
No, I can't remember the last time that it's happened.
People do check their text messages in the movies sometimes. Which But it's not too. Stadium seating has really solved that as a major problem anyways.
That is true. I'm a big fan of stadium.
Anyways, back to the art.
Back to the theater. Yes. So Grissom and Catherine arrive. Jim Brass is already on scene. And then Jim Brass is great. This is another like just solid like, he just has like several lines in this episode that I'm just like,
what he was doing at first, and I was like, oh, he's trying.
He's pretending
to be noir.
He's in a noir film. Yeah. He's like,
this is like fake smoking. And,
yeah, I thought it was great. But we learn from Jim Brass that the victim is Gus Sugarman or Silverman. I thought it was Sugarman, but now I have Silverman written down. I don't know. Gus something is the dentist, and he has a single puncture wound to the neck. We go to credits. We return to the theater. Now Doc Robbins is there.
No explanation why we need Doc Robbins to be in the movie theater.
I feel like David wasn't available for shooting, and so they had to be Doc Robbins.
Oh, he's doing the okay.
I feel that's the only explanation I can think of.
An autopsy in the theater for some reason?
No, I feel like they couldn't get David for this episode, and so they were like, "Well, Doc Robbins is going to come in here and do this."
That makes
sense. He's there. He's debating film with Grissom. They notice, in addition to the puncture wound, that there's bruising around the mouth. They also think that a chain was ripped off of his neck. Catherine ends up in this discourse, dropping a flashlight. She follows it, finds a screwdriver. I have to point out that she does have gloves on, so kudos. She has gloves.
Yep.
You're supposed to photograph these things before you pick them up. And she just picks the screwdriver up without taking any photographs. And I was like, what are you doing? Yeah. Again, kudos on the gloves, not kudos on not taking any pictures.
They do this a lot when they're trying to have this like mid-crime scene reveal with the audience, where they'll pick up a piece of evidence instead of photographing it.
Yeah.
So that they could show it to someone so they could talk about it. And it's like, they know what they're doing. At this point, they know what they're doing. Like, they've been told by the consultant enough times, you know, we would photograph that first. You could just walk over. But that doesn't make a difference.
No, I know it doesn't. So we're then with Jim Brass and Grissom. They're talking to a witness. He describes the potential suspect as a tall, redheaded woman. But after she left, he never saw her return. And as they're standing there, and like the rest of the theater is, you know, kind of now out in the lobby area because they're interviewing everybody.
Yeah.
He's saying that he doesn't see her there. He's like, I don't see her there. There's another funny line here with Jim Brass, because the guy, the witness that they're talking to, is like, oh, well, I would kill somebody for not turning off their phone in a movie theater. And Jim Brass is like, yeah, that's why we didn't ask you. Why are you giving us this unsolicited commentary?
I do feel like that was the temperate concept at the time. Like, people, it was a real hated on.
It was real. Yeah. Yeah. So then we go to our second storyline. Sarah, Nick, and Warwick are at a warehouse. O'Reilly, the detective, is there as well. There is a dead boy sprawled out essentially in the middle of this warehouse. Bullet holes everywhere.
Just like O'Reilly's line, I hope you brought extras or enough supplies.
Yeah, enough supplies. And they're like, why?
You're gonna be here for a while.
Yeah. And they open the door, and it's like, oh, that's why. We learn that this victim is Timmy McCollum. We're then with Greg Sanders, Jackie, and Catherine. They're looking over the screwdriver. Jackie and Greg Sanders decide to race. They make a bet, and essentially they're, you know, who can get fingerprints or who can get DNA to like help push the case forward first. We have a scene with Grissom with Archie. He's able to access the private number, because when Grissom is in the theater looking at the victim's phone, it's a private number. Sorry, what was that?
Is Archie on his day off in this scene? He's in like a t-shirt instead of a lab.
He's hanging out. He's in the lab. He's not customer facing. It's fine. So they find the private number. They then we're back with the team in the warehouse, and there's just like a nice little montage with some like weirdly upbeat music.
Yes.
Along to it.
There was like a scene when they first were like dividing and conquering, where they're like, Sarah's like, I'll take the outside. Nick's like, I'm Dennis Rodman. And I still to this day I still cannot figure out what he actually meant by that. I think he means
I'll take the perimeter.
No, I think he means like the perimeter.
Oh, maybe. Like, no, I don't like know. Garbage.
Rodman is like, I don't know if he was technically a center, but yeah, he's very renowned for his rebounding in the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan in the 90s. And you can't like hover under the basket. So you sort of like hang around the perimeter of the paint.
Okay.
And I was like, I think that's what he meant. But I was like, but then Warwick is like, I'll take everything below the knees, which I assume means the floor. I was like, why? Who wanted this weird euphemism?
I don't know. I'm not a bad. Can you tell, listeners?
I don't know which writer was responsible for that series of dialogue. Sure. I was like, I don't think the average viewer of this show, who am, you know, like a sort of a fair weather sports fan, I don't think the average viewer of a crime, like serial crime drama show,
is going to get it.
Sure they are. And it's like, why is this in here?
Yeah.
It's because the guy who wrote this line is a sports fan.
He is for sure. But through this montage, we have Warwick like collecting, pouring out beer, collecting beer bottles. getting, Sarah's getting tire treads. She ends up getting a bamboo stick off the roof. There are also shards of glass and black plastic pieces on the ground. And then when Nick is done with his perimeter work, we learn that there were 109 bullets because he had to insert 109 rods into the wall. So 109 bullets at this crime scene.
Shout out to Nick's one-liner when Sarah brings down the bamboo pole. Oh, you can bag it.
Oh, yeah. She's like, yeah, nice. I like
10-foot, 12-foot, 15-foot long bamboo pole. I don't know.
I feel the camaraderie is awesome in this episode. It's not overstated, but you could just like tell that they're comfortable with each other and they can kind of like joke and jab at each other a little bit, and it's all like in good fun. But this is not quite as fun of a scene. I mean, it's not a terrible scene, but we have Catherine and Grissom at a home. We end up learning that a woman named Audrey lives here, so she answers the door. They go in. We learn, again, now I have Sugarman. I'm just going to call him Sugarman.
I looked it up. It's Sugarman.
It is. Okay, I thought so because I was like, that's weird that a dentist is named Sugarman because obviously sugar is not good for your teeth. So
he's Dr. Gus Sugarman. His great name for a dentist. There was probably a one-liner about that got cut.
Probably. I would think so. So we learn that Sugarman was her dentist. She supposedly was supposed to go to the movies with him that night, but it, you know, was a late showing. She decided not to go. She's acting, I don't want to say coy, but she's acting like she's trying to cover something up. Yeah, and the phone rings. She like lowers the volume on her voicemail so they can't hear like what the message says. Grissom spots a movie flyer. It's like a movie schedule.
Yeah,
it's on her, like pinned on her board.
Monthly calendar to show you what's playing at the
theater.
Art house.
Yeah. So we're then, Warwick is with Doc Robbins. The victim died of a single gunshot wound to the chest, but he's also just like covered in all these marks and bruises. Like his whole body is covered in these like circular bruises and marks.
I thought, and I had all these guesses for what the circular bruises and marks would be.
Oh yeah, okay, what did you guess? I knew this as soon as I started watching this episode. I was like, oh, I remember this episode. So I knew
none of them are right.
I mean, fair.
The first one was they were wearing like a bulletproof vest, right? Because of a bullet and gunshot involved. And but then that made me think like, yeah, that's a lot of bullet, like
109.
You shoot. Well, this is a lot of times to get hit by even wearing a bulletproof vest, it's really bad. So then I just went to probably what is the most likely thing if you ever saw a boy covered in welts,
paintballs. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did think that later. I'll mention where I thought that. Yeah. I mean, I already knew the answer, but I remember later in the episode being like, those look like paintball welts. Yeah. That's what I would think they were if I didn't know.
I was like, all right, these are probably paintballs. And there was a weird, like, boys will be boys. I was like, I don't know about boys will be boys. This is like a really rough boying going on here.
Yeah. Like, it was a little intense. We also learn the scene that he was shot from above at a 25-degree angle, which does not match the angle of the roof, like the opening in the roof.
So
they're very confused.
It wouldn't have worked
out. Yeah, it would have been a 45-degree angle, but it was a 25-degree angle that he was shot from. And then this might be the title of our episode. We'll see. There was a few really good lines in this episode. So we'll see which one ends up winning in the end. But Warwick ends this scene by saying there's nothing harmless about death. And then we transfer over to Catherine and Grissom with Jackie. She is wearing the weird hat because she lost the bet to Gray. Yeah, it's a callback. She lost the bet to Gray Sanders. Look at
the episode title name. It's Abracadaver.
Oh, is that the one that he's wearing? That makes sense. Yeah. So she's wearing the hat in this one. But she did find a palm print, but they can't use it for identification because they realized that she was wearing leather gloves.
Yeah, the print is just like the grain of
leather. It's the grain of the leather. It's not like an actual print.
Which you could identify the gloves if you found the gloves.
Yes.
If
that happens before that potential if. Jim Brass approaches Catherine and Grissom, and we learned that Audrey filed a sexual assault suit against a dentist that she was going to go on a date with at the movies. So that's weird.
That's not a weird sexual assault suit, by the way.
I've heard of cases like that.
Yeah, they don't really get into it. You have to use your imagination. But
well, they say that she accused him of molesting her while she was under anesthesia.
Yeah,
at his
office.
That's
sort of like the horror story you hear.
Yeah. For sure. It is not a good one. But we also learn in the scene that the usher saw a redheaded woman make a phone call, so they're going to go back to the art house to talk to the usher. Before then, Warwick walks into a room with Sarah. She's like working. She's investigating the bamboo. We learn in the scene that five people walked into the warehouse. Four people ran out.
Based on the shoe treads, right?
Yes. And then there's no fingerprints on the bamboo stick. So Warwick is like, well, why don't we test for GSR? So they test for GSR. There's no GSR. So then there's another. This is just like, again, there's just like nice little moments throughout this episode. Sarah's like, I'm not giving up on this bamboo stick. Like, there has to be something we're going to get this like, on the bamboo stick.
Probably just trash, basically, is what he's saying.
So she carries it to Hodges. She's like, I'm going to bring it to
down
Hodges,
the hallway.
Down the hallway to, like, see what else we can find. Before we follow that thread, though, Jim Brass, Catherine, and Grissom are with the usher. He points to the payphone, says, like, that's where the tall redheaded woman made a call. And he confirms that she was wearing gloves. He was like, yeah, it's weird. It's like 70 degrees in here. Why was she wearing gloves? And that she also threw something away in the trash.
Also, they're in Las Vegas, so outside
is like 102 degrees. Yeah, it's very hot. I was there in July into early August this year and can confirm very hot.
One of the hottest times of the year to be there, too.
I know. It was a Star Trek convention. I couldn't say no. I mean, I probably should have said no because I spent a lot of money, but I had a good time. So Catherine approaches the cleaners. Grissom ends up buying the gloves off of one of the cleaners because she found it in the trash, and the protocol is like, hey, if someone throws it out, like the cleaners can claim it. Like that's fine.
Not the first time Grissom has bought evidence.
This is not the first time that Grissom has. I feel like in court, this wouldn't be able to hold up. Like, oh, how did you collect this evidence? I gave someone $100 for it. You know, like.
There was the homeless guy with the clothes or a jacket or something. But I think there was another time, too.
Yeah. Like, I know which one
like
you're talking about.
Many times, I feel like. But I wonder if he just has a small, like, petty cash fund.
Yeah, his budget for buying evidence.
Acquiring evidence.
Maybe.
You know, but theoretically, you could get a warrant for those gloves.
Oh, for sure.
I don't think you could get a warrant. I think you could get an officer to take them under probable cause. Give her a receipt. It, you know, just become evidence.
Yeah, Grayson's just being nice. He's like, I can just give you money instead of going through all that. So they get the gloves. Greg Sanders is then testing the beer bottles that were collected at the warehouse. Nick enters. We learn that there are five donors, aka like five DNA profiles off of the beer bottles. One of them, though, is the brother of the victim, or probably the brother of the victim. They have like related DNA. And so Sanders is like, most likely it's probably his brother. Like,
yeah, or his identical twin son.
That's basically the way like something weird like that. So then that brings us to Warwick with the mom and the brother, which is my spot. The guest star.
Oh, good. I have zero spot the guest stars.
This is Charlie Hofheimer. And I definitely had a moment while I was watching this where I was like, do I just know him from this episode? Right? Like, have I seen this episode enough times that I just think I know him from this episode? But I was like, let me check his IMDb. No. What I know him as is he didn't have a name in this movie. I didn't realize this, but it's a short but pivotal scene in a movie called The Village.
Yeah,
which is M. Night Shyamalan.
I know the character is
young security guard.
Yeah.
So I did, as soon as I read that, I was like, yes, that is where I recognize.
Spoiler alert for the movie The Village, because this
scene is a 2004 movie.
Ruining the whole movie if you've never seen it.
Yes.
But a group of people who live in the woods. They have to climb. Somebody finally is. They leave their village. They, you know, there are all these reasons why they wouldn't.
There's supposedly monsters in the border all around the village, and so nobody leaves the village because of these like monsters who live in the woods on the outskirts of the village.
It's set in like Renaissance-esque medieval timing.
I would say more like pilgrim time.
Yeah, and she goes over this fence, and then you realize it's actually basically the year 2000, and they've just...
They're in, like, a reserve, essentially.
A private reserve. And this person is, like, both the way the audience realizes where like, what's going on, but also, like, the person who, like, fills in this character as to this world was all a sham after all. You know, your worst fears are being realized.
Yeah.
But so I couldn't tell you. I could not have told you that he was that person. But I remember.
Oh, I
that
could. As soon as I saw that credit, I was like, yeah. I was like, that totally is him. So that's how I know him. So they're talking to. We learn his name is Kevin. So they're talking to Kevin and his mom. We learn that they have a minivan, and Kevin is trying to say that he bought beer for Timmy, but like that was it. Like, hey, I bought him beer. Yeah, I know I shouldn't have, but I did. He was just gonna like hang out with some friends, and
which they kind of disprove later, but then don't really bring it directly to his face because there's just enough else going on.
They don't bring it to his face, but I'll bring it up when we get there. It ends up playing a very pivotal role in this episode, and they're obviously like not quite believing Kevin, so they want to keep Kevin for additional questioning. Hodges is then with Sarah, and there are spiral gauges like tip to tip, like all the way down this bamboo stick.
I feel like they do a really bad job explaining these gouges.
It makes perfect sense later on.
Like, I was like, this is maybe one of the pieces of evidence they don't do the best job with, sort of getting you there, like, that's in fair. A faithful way.
That's fair. Warwick enters. We learn that the glass collected at the scene is from a camera lens, so now they're like, oh my goodness, did someone catch this on camera? Before we find that out, though, we're with Catherine and Grissom in Jim Brass's office with Jim Brass. We learn that the prints match the glove. Like, they're able to like make some sort of match.
Yeah, they get the glove.
They know the glove is the glove.
Grain of the glove. It's the same glove.
But ammonia would kill any DNA. So if there's any DNA on the glove, like, or inside the glove, right? Like, if your hand was like sweating inside of the glove,
I think
that the ammonia that the cleaners were using killed any DNA. But they,
which also was weird because like usually the ammonia would be on the outside of the glove,
right? That's what you would think.
Like, the whole point of wearing gloves.
But she was wearing the gloves, so I think they thought
plastic gloves.
Yeah, and then she put the glove
and
over
then put these leather gloves over her plastic gloves.
Yeah, and that's how the ammonia got inside the gloves. But they do realize that they're looking for someone else because Audrey called from her house to the to his cell phone, and that I think the outgoing call was also to Audrey's house, and like someone, so. They're like, okay, someone else must be involved here.
They immediately give away any possibility that she had, like, an accomplice make a fake call from her.
That was never a question for reasons unknown.
Well, that often happens with facts that are true, even though they shouldn't know they're true.
Yeah, accept
them maybe a little bit easier than the ones that are false, which they always do a good job of running down. But yeah, no, it's a reasonable assumption. But like, because one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, they probably prove that off screen.
Yeah. But this brings Jim Brass, Catherine, and Grissom back to Audrey's house. And when they arrive, they hear the phone like off the hook. So they end up going inside of the house. They find her hanging. There is a chain at her feet. But as Grissom is continuing to, inspect the scene.
Probably is the reason why they didn't keep following up with Audrey.
Yeah, that's probably a good reason. Grissom realizes that she has marks on her neck below the cord, and so he's starting to think that she was strangled and then hanged. And he also notices that the movie schedule has been ripped off of the board that he saw earlier. So they go to try to track that down. Grissom ends up finding it like flush, like stuck in the toilet. He's able to like plunge it out of the toilet. We leave this crime scene for a bit. We're with Warwick. We have a little matchy-matchy. He matches the tread from the scene to the mom's minivan.
Those tires were pristine.
He continues examining the car or the minivan. He finds blood inside of the door. He also finds like the container for the beer, like the cardboard container for the beer. Yeah,
cardboard box.
Yeah.
This is what I was applying before, is like they show a reenactment where he said, oh, I took a sip and I gave him the six pack.
Yeah.
And then implying that he left, but now the container is in his car.
So
obviously it must not have happened that way.
Yep. So we go to O'Reilly. He is with Kevin in interrogation. Kevin's trying to say, like, look, I don't hang with Timmy. You know, like, I'm older. I have my own friends. He has his friends. Like, we don't really cross paths that way.
Which, by the way, is, like, very normal.
Very normal.
It turns out to be a lie.
It does turn out to be a lie, but it is very normal.
Generally speaking, like, my brothers, we have an even smaller gap, and, like, we had none of the same friends, really.
Yeah.
We all had our own friends.
Yeah. Nick and Work are watching, though, and as they're watching, we learn that all of the bullets came from the same gun. So all 109 bullets came from a single gun. And
imagine being the guy who has to check every single one of the 100.
I do. There is a scene, and it might have already passed because
they talk.
You know,
they talk to. They mentioned the character's
Nick,
name.
Nick says that he dropped, or Nick or Warwick said they dropped like a bag of bullets off with Bobby and ballistics. They're like, yeah, I had to drop of like a bag of bullets. Or off. They,
there's another one where he said Bobby. Maybe it's this one where he says Bobby. Let us know. Like, yeah. Bobby's not in the episode, but
Bobby's just mentioned. Twice. Just mentioned in the episode. They also in this scene talk about getting surveillance from the liquor store because they got the receipt from the liquor store. So they're like, maybe we can get surveillance of Kevin at the liquor store.
He's gonna get a receipt, but really it was just a sticker, like a price sticker on the side of the box. Thing,
yeah.
They showed you that.
Yeah.
That was where the writing and the filming directing didn't quite line up.
Yeah, didn't quite connect. Where Nick and Warwick end up then going into the interrogation room with Kevin. They want to see a wound on his arm. He's like bleeding through a wrap, and they're like, what is on your arm? And he has what we, well, yeah, spoiler alert. What we'll learn is like a ricochet bullet.
Yeah, yeah, it's a grazed bullet shot.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
This evidence, I'm sorry, man, you cannot have a witness in interrogation. He's 18 years old, so he's an adult.
He's an adult. And he
asked, don't you need a warrant? And then you basically threaten him
to bend him over,
his clothes off. That is not going to sit well with a jury. So
No.
I'm like, that's probably going to invalidate some evidence.
I agree. But he takes his shirt off because of essentially being threatened to take his shirt off. So he takes his shirt off, and he's covered in the same markings that his brother was. So he has, like, identical, essentially. He's, like, circular welts and bruises all over his body. We go back to crime scene A, or storyline A. Catherine and Grissom are, you know, investigating the schedule, and they realize that there's writing above the Strangers on a Train listing. So there's a bit of a conversation about the movie Strangers on a Train. And after doing some CSI magic,
I have to say, Strangers on a Train, I really applaud this episode for basically saying, listen, we're ripping off the plot to this movie you've never seen.
Yep.
But we're putting it in the movie and we're making it part of
the
meta. It's I loved that aspect of this episode. It was great. Yeah. Every time we mentioned Stranger the Train, I meant to mention it. But there was something about that I just thought was, it's like classy. It's like, listen, there are all these great stories out there that you're not going to go watch. So let us retell them for you.
Yeah. This is a retelling. At this point, almost everything's a retelling. Almost nothing is brand spanking new at this point. So you might as well be honest and just be like,
hey, if you haven't seen The Village, go watch it. Guess how it ends.
They realize that the writing above the Strangers on a Train is Fear EA-117, which they think is a parking space. So then Jim Brass,
I went digging because I was trying to figure out. So anyone who's listening to this today, there is a newer thing in Las Vegas called the Sphere.
Yes.
Which is a giant LED screen, the shape of a ball.
Yep.
On the outside, and on the inside has a giant LED screen that you do these immersive experiences in. And it's very quickly, I think, becoming iconic in Vegas.
Oh, yeah,
They referred to it as the Sphere Hotel. And I was like, is there an old hotel they tore down to build this thing? And I'm pretty sure they're just referring to the Stratosphere.
Oh, they might be.
And then that's as far as I could tell and I literally found a Reddit thread where somebody was watching this episode of CSI and asking this question 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
That was hilarious.
Oh, that's awesome.
But the other thing I realized is the Stratosphere is no longer called the Stratosphere. They call it the Strat. So now I think the people at the Sphere paid the people at Stratosphere, unless they're owned by the same company, which could also, I don't know, but to change their name so that this could be, the Sphere could be the only one with Sphere in it.
Yeah.
But I was like, all of this so long, I was like, Sphere, what? I've been to Vegas so many times. There's no hotel called the Sphere. There's a new thing called the Sphere, but that wasn't there five years ago.
It was definitely not there
20
there.
Years ago.
No.
And then I was like, and I thought the Stratosphere, but then at the hotel, they never showed it.
It's a
pretty iconic building, the Stratosphere.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm 99% certain the Sphere is the Stratosphere.
That makes sense. Yeah, so I think that's
the place that they're going to now.
Yeah, so they go there, Jim Brass, Catherine, and Grissom. They're talking to, later learn his name is Anthony, but he's just like a manager of this like show, of this production. he's like, doesn't know Audrey. They're showing him a picture of Audrey. He's like, I don't know. Like, is she a dancer? Like, did she used to work for me? Like, I don't, like, you know. And you just get, you, they very quickly establish that he's like a ugh guy. As a woman, a dancer walks past him and he slaps her, like slaps her on the ass as she's walking past. Yeah. And so then Grissom goes into the room, like where the dancers prepare, and he finds a station with the same movie schedule. And we learn that that station belongs to Kelly Goodson. He ends up talking to Kelly. She, at first, when she's like coming off the stage, is wearing a red wig. She takes the wig off. Yeah, she has like
blonde hair underneath. Red rigs. All the dancers are.
Yeah.
Which I think is important because they never tell you explicitly that, oh, this character who is in fact not a redhead could have been wearing the red wig from her job, but they show it to you, right?
You know? They show it to you. And Grissom even asks her, hey, do you wear this, you know, out ever? Outside of work, and that's what she's like, oh, I don't get a chance to go out. Like, I work too much. I don't have a chance to go out. We also learn in the scene that to, you know, help her aching feet and legs, she has like her own recipe for like a cream that she applies after the shows. So then we're with Sarah on a computer. Warwick enters and we see a light show for the trajectory. So they built a computer model to show the trajectory of all of the bullets. And they're all essentially coming from like a singular bamboo stick in the middle of the road. Like it's all coming from one column, like just straight down from the roof.
Yeah,
down
to the floor.
That's where
technically,
they're all coming from.
Like from a mathematical standpoint, you could have been circling around the room and accomplished the same thing because the line could have kept extending, but they all convene conveniently in this one column. So it would stand. The most reasonable explanation is that somehow something is firing from there, moving up and down or something like that.
We then have a Sarah and Nick walk and talk, and Nick has gotten some stills from the liquor store of other people, like other, I call them like kids. So I think some of them are closer to like 18 or 19, but they all look very young. So there's like additional kids that were with Kevin and Timmy at the liquor store. So they have those stills. Grissom is in his office. He's checking out the creams that he took from Kelly or ones that he bought to replicate what Kelly has. Catherine enters. We learn that Kelly had filed a lawsuit against Anthony, hired the same firm that Audrey did. And then we realized that they know that they're not gonna be able to get DNA off of these items that they've collected so far. But Grissom is looking for transfer of the cream. Special recipe. Yeah. So that's what he's doing. So we
did Grissom, like, when he was talking to her,
get the exact ratio of everything?
He was like, she gave him this recipe, is the implication, right?
I think so.
But also, was she just getting naked in front of him?
I think so. I think she's taking off her top. Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it's fine if she's fine with it, but like, come on, Grissom. You should probably give her some privacy. You're basically in a dressing room.
Yeah, with no warrant. Like no warrant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit much for sure.
And not just her. Five other dancers who aren't suspects in a crime.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was like, that scene was kind of like really weird to me. That's why.
I agree. Yeah. It was a bit of an odd scene. But this scene brings us to a scene with Greg Sanders. He's swapping the gloves. He's swapping the cord. We then have O'Reilly with one of the kids from the liquor store, like from the stills. He shows he has the exact same bruises and markings. And they talk to two other kids. Same thing. One of them also has like a shiner, like he obviously got hit like right. It looks like someone punched him like straight in the eye. But we learn that he was not punched in the eye. Instead, he was filming and a stray bullet shot out the lens. And so then like bounced the camera back right into his face. And thus, that's how he got the shiner. So then this brings us to Warwick, Sarah, and Nick watching. I put their Jackass videos because that's essentially, it's like them doing Jackass stuff.
I'm 100% with you.
This is key Jackass era. Like this is when it was like getting, when it was big, like when it was first starting out. So
if you are listening and you maybe
are too
don't
young.
Know the Jackass videos, it's basically a bunch of juvenile adults doing stunts and weird things and that often hurt themselves and embarrass themselves for laughs. They used to play on MTV.
On MTV, yeah. And that, I mean, to be fair, they just released a new Jackass movie like 2 years ago.
Movies that came out?
Yeah. So as we're flipping between the CSI folk watching the videos and O'Reilly talking to Kevin. So we're bouncing back and forth between these, and we learn from Kevin that they essentially kept wanting to outdo each other with these stunts, right? Like one of the kids would be like, okay, we're gonna do this stunt. So they would do this stunt. And then it would be like, okay, well, the next one would want to like outdo the one before them. So then when it came Timmy's turn, he like stayed up all night. This was like really important to him. And he was the one. And this also might be the title of the episode again. There was like a few good like stick out lines in this episode to me. Bamboo Russian Roulette.
Yes.
So essentially they would put the bamboo stick down from the ceiling to the floor. I guess like stick the trigger. I don't know. They don't really explain how they did that because it just kept firing. So
I was thinking of imagining that like as it spun around, it would just keep hitting the trigger.
Okay, and maybe so that's going okay.
It's also like an automatic weapon.
Yeah.
You know, all the, you know, even more ridiculous weapon for a bunch of children to have access to. But
yeah. So we see what happened to Timmy is that on their final round of Bamboo Russian Roulette, he gets shot straight in the chest. Right. Yep. So, and
I mean, they said they did it a bunch of times, but like
that's like seven so or eight, like six dangerous. Or six. So dangerous.
There's 109 bullet holes in the wall, but I mean, it's firing at all these random angles. You see them like ducking for cover and in like a reenact or in a video, I guess, because it's recorded. That one guy got errant bullet hit the lens. They're going to shut your eye out, kid. You know? I was like, why? Like, I don't know. They don't really tell you at the end of this episode who, if anyone, is going to face charges.
No, we don't. We never learned that.
The older brother is 18 years old. He's an adult. And there's a lot of things that he did in that leading up to that moment that are illegal. I can only imagine that he's going to spend some time
leading up to it. And then we also learn in this scene that Timmy was still breathing after he got shot. It wasn't like he got shot and he immediately died. He was on the floor gasping for air and they left him for dead. And Kevin is like, well, I didn't want to get in trouble. Because O'Reilly's like, why didn't you call an ambulance? Why didn't you call the police? Like, he was lying there gasping for air. Like, why didn't you do anything? Also, and he's like, oh, I didn't want to get in any trouble.
Also, if you don't get arrested, you're probably going to be dead by morning when your mom beats you to death.
Beats you to death. Leaving
your younger brother for dead.
Yeah. And this is another good line. I'm not sure I'll make it the title of the video, but, or the video, the podcast. Kevin's like, well, we didn't have a death wish, you know? O'Reilly's like, are you sure about the death wish? Like, you sure you didn't have a death wish? Like, you were bamboo Russian rouletting at a warehouse and you did 109 rounds. And by some miracle, only one of those was a deadly round. Like,
Greta, stop trying to make bamboo Russian roulette happen. It's not going to happen.
So that wraps up that storyline. We never find out if anybody's facing. That's it. We don't know if anyone's facing any criminal charges. We
don't get another scene with the mom.
We don't get another scene with the mom. No, that is the end of storyline B. So we go back to storyline A. Grissom and Catherine are with Kelly. And they're talking to her about Langley and Langley, about the firm that both her and Audrey had hired. And they're essentially just telling her the story, right? Yeah. They're just like, oh, you probably met at the lawyers or you met at the movies and then you started talking to each other and essentially strangers on the train happened, right? Like she had a problem. You had a problem. You could help each other out with a problem. And Kelly kept up her end of the bargain and expected Audrey to do the same. When she didn't, she started like harassing her and stalking her. And Kelly's like, okay, you must love the movies. Like, that's a great story, but it's just a story. And Grissom's like, oh, no. Oh, no. Like, that is a story, true. But the proof is the chemicals. And your concoction is like all over the gloves and all over the cord and all over the chain. So,
yeah, that's the only real piece of evidence, which I do think
I think she could
get a juror. Like, I do think there's enough evidence there to convict her. Like, I do think a jury could be swayed, but it's a lot of steps.
A lot of steps.
Scientists on the stand trying to explain to them, no, we got the formula from her. And this is how we know it's the same thing, you know?
Yeah, I think
they probably cut a deal.
What I would hope is that, you know, now they know that she was like harassing Audrey. Hopefully Audrey didn't delete all of those voicemails, right? Hopefully Audrey left.
You know,
Like, if she left threatening voicemails on her, you know what I mean, on her phone. There's the evidence destruction left... with
a flyer trying to flush it down the toilet.
Right.
But they're, yeah, that's interesting. They didn't talk about the answering machine.
Right.
You know, yeah, we don't know, like, they can establish. This is the kind of thing, they don't really, they have that thing where they're telling her what happened.
Yeah.
You know, maybe met the movie theater, maybe that met at the lawyer's office. Yeah. I'm imagining, and I really wish they had done like a reenactment of this. Is like maybe they recognized each other from one place and then saw each other in another place.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, I've seen you at the movies. And like,
about, like, you know what I mean? Like, I almost wanted them to show me how it happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, play it out for me a little bit. You know, could have just cut to a black white noir, you know, reenactment or something. I don't know. But that was like, it felt a little unfulfilling, the ending of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
For both those storylines. And I'll talk about that a little bit later when I score this episode. But yeah, I was like, there was just something there. There was more on the bone there to sort of do from a storytelling standpoint. And it was just a little sad that they didn't get there.
That's fair. So that is the end of storyline A, but not the end of the episode. We go to Grissom at the outhouse watching a noir film. Catherine joins him, and we learn in their exchange that Grissom, in fact, doesn't really like noir films. Like, that's not his jam. And Catherine's like, then why are we here, essentially? Instead, he likes silent movies. And then that's the end of the episode.
Good nod to his hearing loss.
Good nod to his hearing loss. So, Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I really, really, really wanted to like this episode. Well, I did like this episode. The first time I watched this episode, about two-thirds of this episode, I was like, this is a really good episode.
Yeah.
I don't really know what's happened yet. Like, I haven't, like, they're doing a good job of the evidence. I don't feel like they've cut any corners or done anything. Like, I'm along for the ride.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm in bamboo pole land. Right? Something's going on here. I can't figure it out. Great mystery. We get there. The episode ends. Both storylines end up very quickly. You're not really sure what the outcome is going to be. You don't even actually see anyone put handcuffs on anyone.
No. No, we don't have that at all.
We know what's happened in these, you know what I mean? But again, like, I want you to show me a little bit more, or I want, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair.
It left me leaving. So I ended at 3.5. Out of 5 with a play. If you asked me with 10 minutes left of this episode, I was like, this is going to be a 4, 4.5 for sure.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And they just did not stick the landing. You can have the nicest hostess on your airplane, you know, flight attendants. You can get a nice smooth ride. But if you go to land and the airport and the plane skids and shakes and all your baggage just fall out of overhead, you're gonna be like, that was a terrible flight.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, get that recency bias, you know. But yeah, that's the way it was. It was like, and I watched it a second time and it didn't have that component anymore. I think they did a great job, I think, also with like the characters all around, which is like, again, I wanted to write like this episode. This episode, there's a version of this episode that's a 5 out there somewhere in the multiverse.
Yeah.
There's a version of this episode I've written that's a 5 because it had everything that it needed to get there. And it didn't quite get there in the end. But it's a good episode. I don't know what value you get in watching it a second time, because I think once you know the mysteries and all the things, it's like there's not as much, like, you know, there's not as much to unravel. So I'd be interested to hear you. You know, having already sort of known where both these plot lines were going, watching it again, how did you feel?
Yeah, so I think I'm a little more forgiving of this episode. I'm giving it a 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5, yeah.
It's
hard to argue. I wanted to give it 4 out of 5, and at the last moment, I was just like, I left such a bitter taste in my mouth.
I could totally understand that. I think I'm just a little bit more forgiving in that aspect of things. Like, I was like, oh, like, I guess the ambiguousness of it doesn't bother me as much.
But it had everything, like, had everything I wanted, a good episode.
And that's what, like, you know, both storylines, like, moved along well. Like, there was never, like, it was definitely one of those episodes where I was like, oh, this doesn't feel that long. Like, when it ended, I was like, oh, wow, like, it's already over. Like, it moved at a good pace. Both storylines, you know, had levels of, like, intrigue and interest to them. The again, the I mentioned it as we were reviewing, like the camaraderie between, you know, the team members was great. I loved that they ended with like a cute little Grissom and Catherine being buds moment in the movie theater. Like,
which was a great callback to like Catherine asking him, do you ever go with anybody to the theater?
And he's like, nope. You know. Yeah, so she joins up. I thought that was nice. I think I agree with you that it would be a watch. Like, I don't think you really pick up anything new in a second watch through. Like, it's a solid watch.
Yeah,
I
was so bored, but I'm like, meh. For lack of a better term, watching this the second time that I was like, because at first I was like, well, maybe when I rewatch it, like if I enjoy rewatching as much, I'll make it a 4. And I rewatched it and I was like, no, I can't give this a rewatch.
That's fine.
I was like, I can't get you to a 4, buddy.
Yep.
Sorry, nope. You were just so close.
Yep. Nope. It's
I want one. So, yeah.
I actually
think there's a really easy version of this story where we're at 4.5. It's like you lost half a point for each of the endings.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And I also like that in addition to like the CSI cast, like the main cast having like good camaraderie and good scenes together, that like the lab, people got some solid scenes. Like Hodges had some funny scenes in there, and Archie was in there, and Jackie and Greg Sanders had their back and forth. So I don't know. I'm a big character focused individual, and I just felt like this was a really overall good like character episode. So I give it a 4.
Yeah, I think if I was gonna rate the individual components, this is like a 5 out of 5 for character.
Yeah.
You know, without being a story, without the main plot revolving around a character, which is like maybe the only way you could have more of a character episode.
Yeah.
They fit it in very, very well.
So we'll see if we give a rewatch to next week's episode when we return to review season 3, episode 20, Last Laugh. In the meantime, you can support us on Patreon at Who Are You Colon, a CSI podcast. You can find us on Facebook the same way. We're also, again, now on the B Sky, on Blue Sky. So if you search for Who Are You CSI Pod, we are there. You can also find us on Instagram the same way. Technically, we're still on Twitter. We're not sure how much longer we're going to be on there, but we are technically still on there at the time being. So probably wouldn't super recommend following us there because I'm not sure how much longer we're going to keep that one up, but we'll see where it goes. We also have a website. You can find us at whoareyou.csipod.com. But otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.